We're in week five. Next week, week six, is the last week in this first session. So let me remind you again that the second session, there'll be a 1 week break, and then the second session starts. And there's a charge for the second session. It's the usual charge. I actually don't remember what it is right now, but whatever it is, you can find out, I'm sure, on the website. And let's see, is there anything else I need to remind you of? Let me say a couple of things. One is next week, or I think, yeah, maybe after next week's class, I'm going to ask Kathleen to send you an evaluation form, which I'll have to create between now and then. I really want to get some feedback on how this has gone for people. And, you know, maybe for those of you who've done this before, who've been online before, a comparison, a sense of what's different. I'm just very interested in knowing how this has been working for people. Okay. That's really all we need to know right now. I can say a little bit about the next session. You know, we've been presupposing throughout this that this discussion of the field that's really implicit in everything we've said. In the next session, we'll start off by looking at the field more specifically. And then we will also in the next session talk more about the mental dimension of space. That's also been implicit and actually pretty explicit in some of what we've been talking about, and we'll talk about it some more today. But we'll focus on it more in the next session. Okay, so let's start with the practice. The practice is one that we've done already. We did last time. It has to do with distance. So we may do it a little bit differently this time. But the basic idea is clear. So we've been talking about distance, and the usual way we think about distance is that it is it's where nothing is going on, right? There's the thing over there, whatever it is I'm looking at, and here I am over here, and then the distance is just nothing. So the practice has been to try to get a real sense of the distance itself, the felt sense of distance, and by doing that, in effect, what we're doing is we're filling in the space between me and the object. You know, instead of it just being this emptiness that doesn't count for anything, just kind of an obstacle or a separation, it has its own quality. So look around the room or wherever you are, and whatever your eye lights on, get a sense of the distance between you and that thing, and with a real sense that the distance itself is as real as the thing that you're looking at, as, you know, no more, no less, so just implicit in what you're looking at, something like that. Let's try that for just a couple of minutes, and then I'm going to vary that a little bit. Okay, let's go ahead. Okay, now let's change that. Let's stay with the practice. But instead of thinking of it as the distance between you and the object, think of it as the connection between you and the object. It's just a kind of redefinition, because after all, there has to be a connection, or there couldn't be any experience of the object. So let the distance, experience the distance more as connection. See what difference that makes. Okay, so what did you find? Is there a difference between seeing distance as distance and distance as connection? Or that's a funny way to say it, you know. If you focus on distance, is that one kind of experience? If you focus on connection, is that another? And does focusing on either of them change your relationship or your, let's say, the way that you inhabit space, which is really what we're looking at? While we're, I'm kind of waiting for people, if you have something to say. While we're waiting, let me just say that there's a sense in which distance is just a particular kind of connection, right? When it's the connection of something being at a distance, or it's a connection in which separation is key. That's how I think of it. Okay, David says, the object, the red candle across the room, in two ways. I can name its colors, note its shape, note that it's separate from me, as connection includes everything else related to the object in me, more inclusive, more encompassing. Okay. So connection may, I suppose that when you focus on connection, there's a kind of an interconnection, right? And maybe you're more aware, as you said, David, of the fact that, you know, whatever any object that shows up, it's not like there's this kind of narrow tube between you and the object, right? It's not only connected to you, but it's connected to everything else, let's say, in the visual field. Okay. Lee says, doing the connection practice instantly implied the meaning of the connection between myself and the perceived object. So can you say something more, Lee, about meaning? You could say it verbally, or you could type something. Can you say the meaning of the connection? Okay. I'll let that be. Michael says, with no distance, there is identity, I think you meant to type. And just as the self has trouble knowing itself, we seem to need the connection and perspective that distance allows. Well, Lee says his microphone's not working. Okay. So we seem to need, in order to know something, it seems like we need distance, right? So I think that's true with respect to objects, right? I mean, if there is no distance between me and the object, how could I know it? How could I, identity and distance, we've talked about this. Identity, distance, location, separation, they all kind of go together. And we depend on them to structure the world, you could say. Now, you could contrast that with the sense of inhabiting the world. I mean, you inhabit a world in which there are things at a distance. But if you think of the world as a whole, I mean, we could say your experience as a whole, I'm not so sure that it makes sense to talk about a distance. Okay. So it's a little bit like I was thinking as we did this practice and I looked at the screen, and I see, several of you have your video on, so I see your space, right? I see, so like David in my screen is up on the corner, and behind him is a bookcase and a lamp there, and part of a window and so on. So from my perspective, David's head and all of the objects in his room, and although I wasn't thinking of this, the space that those objects and David's head occupy, because for me it's just occupying, right? It's all flattened out because it's on a screen. So there isn't any distance. I mean, I interpret what I see as distance, the distance between the lamp and the bookcase, the distance between David and the lamp. But it's just all flat on the screen. It's all together. It's like seeing something in a mirror is the, traditionally in Buddhist texts, that's what they talk about as mirrors, but we get to have video screens instead. There's distance that we rely on to make our way around the world, but there's a kind of a no distance that shapes the world as a whole if we're inhabiting it. Now, as selves, we tend to stand at a distance. We're very used to this idea of distance, or we rely on it. We take this bystander position where we're outside of, separate from what we're experiencing. And so what we've been talking about with inhabiting is the possibility of really, in a way, doing away with distance, or seeing that in distance there is this connection as well. Okay, Lily says, it seems that the experience is what we assign it to be. Our frame of mind shapes the relationship between me and the object. Yes, I that's a really kind of central point, and we've come at certain aspects of that, and we're going to continue to explore it. We talked about it last week in terms of what you might think of as subjective distance. If you say, I feel distant from you, or I feel very close to you, clearly, in some sense, that's a relationship, as you say, Lily, a relationship that we assign, right? Because it probably doesn't have, or it doesn't have to have, any connection to physical distance. You could be talking to someone on Skype, let's say, or on the phone, who's several thousand miles away, and it might be very natural to say, I feel very close to you. So distance is a kind of a relationship, distance or closeness, is a relationship that we assign. So, So there's this kind of background question I've been thinking about, which is in why, there are ways of talking about these kinds of issues or connections that don't depend on space. I mean, you wouldn't have to use space as the governing category for making sense of these things. So why do we? And one answer to that, I think, is because we need to understand, or at least it's very helpful to understand, that space is not at all what we think it is. Even the category that's like distance, that seems so totally spatial, it has a mental component to it. And even our even physical space, even if we say, oh, well, subjective, I say I feel close to you, but that's just a metaphor, it doesn't really mean anything. The only kind of real distance and closeness is the kind that shows up in physical space. But what we're seeing, what we were exploring at least, is that that's also not somehow physical and not mental. It's also completely mental. So a category like distance with respect to physical objects is it has to do with how we are in space. It has to do with our way of inhabiting space. And that's really what we've been exploring. So Lily, yes, I think what you're saying here is really important. It's our frame of mind, I'm quoting you, that shapes the relationship. It's our frame of mind, or our way of engaging, or our way of inhabiting, that gives us a sense of the distance, right? And okay, Lee says further, in a way, the entire history of the connection is represented. So I think you're going back up to the sense of meaning, right? You said before, when you did the connection practice, that implied the meaning of the connection between myself and the perceived object. So yeah, so this is actually something that I think we begin to notice again. What's the difference between occupying space and inhabiting space? The one way to talk about that difference is that when we inhabit space, we bring everything about ourselves to the space. Or, you could say it's not that we have to bring it to the space already engages everything about ourselves. So one aspect of that is the history, as you're saying, Lee, that so any object that I encounter is meaningful to me, even if it's only meaningful in the sense of this is totally uninteresting to me. That's still a way of being meaningful. It's a not meaningful way of being meaningful. But very often what the meaning has to do with is our history, with the object. And sometimes it's also our future intentions, our future expectations. So the temporal dimension comes in because that's just part of our nature, is that we as selves, at least, we exist in a temporal mode, with respect to past and present and future. That's part of it. And we assign meanings, or we move in a meaningful world. So, yes. So inhabiting brings all that in. So, okay, there's a number of comments. Great. So Bruce says, when I switched from distance to connection, I felt a shift in locatedness or emphasis. When distance was emphasized, there was a subject-object gap. But with an emphasis on connection, it felt like I moved to inhabiting the linking space itself. And both me and the dresser, I guess, were mutual participants in that space, poles or parts of that space. Okay, great. Well, I'm glad that that shift helps make that point, because I think it's absolutely central. What we're really trying to do, I mean, you could put it in many different ways, and I suppose I do put it in many different ways. One of the ways you could say that the shift that we're interested in is one in which we are, let's say, de-emphasizing the subject-object structure of our ordinary experience. We really do see everything as given together. And our sense of ourselves and our sense of the dresser or whatever else we're looking at, those are part of what's given together. And part of what that means is that there isn't any separation. Or maybe, we want to be kind of careful in how we say these things. Or I do. There isn't any blank, empty space between us and the object. Space is always completely full, you could say. It's always meaningful space, to go back into what Lee was saying. Or it's always based on the kind of framework that we bring to it. It's based on the field. If you know, there's a kind of a field which is meaningful. So what you're saying, Bruce, is that the sense of connected, being connected to something, helps inhabit that space in between, right? There isn't really such a gap. Now, I tried to suggest before that even distance is a kind of connection. But I'm not going to insist on that. That's just one additional way that you could, or one way that you could explore that further. Okay. And Michael says to use the word connection instead of distance, it still seems that the freedom to reach out and embrace is important. Inhabiting space, there is still the delight of recognizing the things with which we most strongly resonate. Yeah, that's nice. That's very nice. And it suggests maybe, why distance, a sense in which we structure the world in terms of distance. Once we understand that that's still a kind of connection, that distance, then it gives us opportunities to appreciate and enjoy and delight in, as you're saying. It's like, if you step outside on a beautiful day and there are trees and there are plants and flowers and so on. I mean, nature somehow invites this way of engaging. The connection is there, the moment you're outside, it's somewhat, you're stepping into a meaningful world, a world in which you assign certain kinds of meanings, tell certain kinds of stories, maybe. All of that is there, and none of that is separate from space. So I feel like I'm kind of repeating myself a lot this morning, but it's such an important point. We the problem that we encounter in this culture, maybe more, I think more than in other cultures, is that we have learned to think of space as empty, meaningless, dead, quiet, and the silence is the word I want. Having nothing to do with our own values and our own concerns, hostile to us in a way. All of that, we're questioning that, we're setting that aside, and that is tremendously important. And that's why we focus on space. Okay. Well, let's see. Okay. Bruce says the separator is the connector. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. It's at various times in the last couple of weeks when I've been kind of thinking about this myself, I've had this image of kind of like a rigid tube. I don't know what it's made out of, that connects me and the thing I'm looking at. It separates me and it connects me. And that's I'm just agreeing with what you said, Bruce. Okay. And David says, restating, Inhabit, we bring or engage everything about ourselves in the space, past, present, and future. When we occupy space, we separate and interpret that separation as distance, object, and subject. Yeah, that's good. That's a good restatement. And I think what I'd add to that is that space gives us this opportunity to bring ourselves fully in. You know, it isn't just about, you know, it's not meat space, as I think somebody's used that phrase. In other words, it's not just about, you know, my body here in this space, which makes it possible for my body and bookcase bodies and so on to appear. No, space allows everything, which is why, you know, we start with appreciation for space. We start with the appreciation for the allowing quality of space. So it's just the opposite of space as a kind of a blankness, and it's just the opposite of the world as hostile to us, as not accepting. You know, I mean, this is maybe saying it a little too strongly, but if you think about how we ordinarily occupy space, or if we take occupying space as central, then any kind of meaning that we bring to our experience is like we have to carve it out of space. It's like with space doesn't allow it. But somehow we have to bring it in, you know, it's like a big fight to live in a world that's meaningful. But what we're exploring, what the TSK vision explores, is we say, no, space is friendly. Space is, you know, it's friendly to our capacities as human beings, to our human engagement, which is, I took that word from another comment by Michael. He says, perhaps human engagement is needed to bring the space of our experience alive, like a river to be alive needs rain and living inhabitants. Yeah, right. And the idea of space is alive. That's exactly right. Okay, well, let's do some practices. That all leads into some practices that we'll do kind of a series here that is related to that. So maybe we're just repeating this point and exploring it, but in a different way. But that, of course, is valuable because the experiential exploration here is really what we're about. You know, the theory or the characterization is, I think the value of thinking or theory or you know, inviting a new vision is exactly that it allows for possibilities. But then we have to step in and inhabit those possibilities. It's kind of related to what one of these comments or one of you made. But okay, so the practice. So the first, so it's going to be a three-step practice. We'll do it over the course of about 5 minutes. So the first step is, just relax. We're kind of going to go back to the theme of appreciating space and tie it into the breath. So as you are sitting there and you're breathing, I can confidently say that you're breathing. Breathe in space. Breathe it in, breathe it back out. Let space just kind of flow in and out. That's all. Just do that for a while. And let your sense of the space that you're breathing in, let it expand, you know, so that in a sense you're breathing in the whole cosmos. No limits, just breathing in all of space. Okay, now we're going to make a small shift. You may already be doing something like this. So instead of having the sense or adding, let's add to the sense that you're breathing in space, let yourself breathe in everything that inhabits space, or I should say occupies space, I guess. So the whole environment, the whole world, everything in your room, just start with the room, you know, so that you're breathing in everything in the room. It's, you know, and then let that expand out to include the space around the room, around the building, and so on. The whole environment that you inhabit. So with your breath, that's all. So it's like you're inhabiting it fully, and you're letting the breath be the connector, maybe. We haven't said anything yet about breathing out, but just when you breathe in, you're breathing in the whole of the realm that you're inhabiting. When you're breathing out, just breathe back out everything that you've breathed in and let that breath fill the whole of the world, right? Fill the whole of the space that you're inhabiting. Okay, now let's make it a little more specific or focus in on one aspect. Still the same practice. But when you breathe in what's meaningful for you. I'll use Lee's word. Or you could say, breathe in what you care about right now. What you care about, or what you're having feelings about. So it's bringing in maybe more specifically a mental dimension. The meaning, the caring, the engaging, all of that is a part of what you breathe in. And out. You don't have to look around and try to identify what it is you care about or what's meaningful. It's just that the world is meaningful. That you do care. Okay. So, as always, I'm interested in your experience, and well, I'm sure everybody's interested. We're all interested in one another's experience and any reflections or questions that brings up. Yes, Ken. Yeah, neat. Okay, so the overlays are things like you know, distance, for instance. Is that the kind of overlay you have in mind, or?
It might be.
Yeah, so there's a move that Rinpoche makes in the TSK books where he talks about positions, and positions are like these rigid overlays that you're describing. But I think what he invites us to do, at least in a couple of places, is to see positions more as positionings, right? As a, you know, that's something that's going on. That's part of what's meaningful, you could say. We position ourselves with respect to everything. We're constantly positioning ourselves and repositioning. And it's just, you know, it's a shifting display. It's you know, the image of a kaleidoscope, I think, is always very helpful in TSK. You know, things are always, reconfiguring themselves from moment to moment in these kind of very complex and potentially very beautiful ways. So you're saying yes. And I mean, so if we say positionings rather than positions, we're not caught up in the rigidity. We're not caught up in the identity. We don't have to be caught up in the locatedness, right? That is what we're aiming or going towards. That's right. That's right. And then Lee says, breathing in with care and passion. I like passion. That's good. Brought my felt sense of connection with the entire cosmos, notably closer to heart. It's quite pleasant. Okay, good. Yeah, there's a kind of, you know, the quality of being at home. It's something that, there's a book, I can't remember the book, I just remember the title. I mean, I don't think I've read it. It's called At Home in the Universe, and that title pops into my head sometimes because it seems to me that that's part of what a TSK vision of space is about. It's really being at home in space and recognizing that space allows that quality of being at home, space is warm and friendly. It's just the opposite. So it used to be, I mean, it's just the opposite of our kind of understanding of space from science. I may have referred to this before, but in the 17th century, kind of at the dawn of the modern age, Pascal wrote a line that's very famous. He said, "The vast silence of infinite space terrifies me." But it is exactly in that vast, silent, infinite space that we have learned to think of ourselves as existing, as occupying that space, which is totally, I've said this already today, it's totally hostile or alien. And at the very beginning of this course, we said, the self lives in the world like an alien, like you're always kind of thinking you don't really belong here. Somebody's going to figure that out and kick you out. You've been pretending all along. We belong here just fine if we're just objects like every other object. But everything that we think of as being fundamental to ourselves, that doesn't belong. So this is the alternative. This is an approach which says, which talks about intimacy. So I'm picking out a word from the chat room. It's nice. I don't have to think about anything myself. I just read. I just read what people write, and I say, yeah, right, just like that. Okay, David says, nourishing, healing, calming, clearing away what obscures this expansive feeling of vitality. So it's a nice point to maybe pull out for a moment or emphasize. If this is an accurate description, the word accurate's a little too, scientific and objective, but if it's right, if it makes sense to talk about space as, it's about being able to inhabit space, then we say, well, why isn't that our experience all the time? And the answer, in a very simple way, is there is something that obscures this expansive feeling of vitality, to quote further, quote David's comment further. Yeah, something obscures it. So what obscures it? Well, one way of talking, the way that we've been looking at, one way of talking about what obscures that at-home quality is the way we understand space as basically empty, except for the things that show up in space, which are objects and a subject. And so, it's kind of like, like if you were imagining that you were in the middle of a flood. It's maybe not quite the right image, but you're in the middle of a flood, and you keep, you're clinging on, desperately on to something that's keeping you afloat. And then you get thrown off that, and you have to grab on to something else, and then you stay with that for a while, and you're for a little bit you can kind of rest and relax, and then you're thrown off again, and this just goes on and on and on and on. The world is fundamentally hostile. It's trying to drown you. It's trying to drown your sense of what's meaningful and valuable, and you keep trying to carve out little places where you can rest for a while. That's the way we've come to see things. The image of a flood isn't quite right because it sounds there's so much energy in that. Well, maybe that's accurate. It's just not exactly how I experience it. Anyway, okay, enough for that image. Okay, dissolving. I'm going on with David. Dissolving self-imposed boundaries. So that's interesting. How do the boundaries get imposed? Are they self-imposed? Yeah. If you buy the notion of a self that does the imposing, so that's a question to explore. Okay, self-imposed boundaries, perceived endings and beginnings. Yeah, all that's is what we're kind of questioning. Okay, and Michael says, drawing in the world and extending out into the world, felt surprisingly like the same act of intimacy. Yeah. Yeah, and I noticed at a certain point that I hadn't bothered to say anything about the out-breath, so I did. But there is, it's kind of an exchange, right? It's this ongoing exchange. Bruce says, it felt like my breathing became the warm, pulsing center or heart of a large organismic whole, which included my body, the space, the room, vital and intimate. Good. Well, that's nicely described. And that's why we do these practices, you know, because we're trying to activate that sense of what's possible in space. Right? I'm just kind of thinking ahead to what we're going to be doing in the next course. In some ways, we'll be looking more at the obstacles. We've been looking at the obstacles here. The obstacles we've been looking at are in terms of our ordinary understanding of space. And so we identified kind of these three dimensions of ordinary space, location and distance and separation. And so we've been working with a counter to that. In the next course, we're going to look more, I think, at some of the mental obstacles, you could say. Which have to do with the position that we take up in space and the way we think, what the role that thought plays in structuring the world and how to work with that. Those are all also really great topics. So it's time to stop. One of the things that let me just point a little bit toward what we're going to talk about next week. And that is, and we've been looking at it, is that there's a kind of a multidimensionality to space. There's the physical space, that's the one that we start off with. And we, in the beginning, we think that's all there is. So TSK vision of space is about opening that up. So we start to see that there's a dimensionality to space which allows for all of these ways of our being present. Space fits all of our potential, or it allows all of our potential. And so that's the dimensionality, the multidimensionality of space. So we'll talk about that next week, and I'll say something, I think, in the transition about it too. Okay, so we'll stop there. Thank you very much, everybody.